Healthcare and senior care is fraught with problems and challenges, but we're also seeing some amazing new clinical treatments and resources. This show will help illuminate and uncover the good, bad, and the ugly in order to equip patients, families, and other healthcare providers. Welcome to Senior Care Confidential.
Welcome to Senior Care Confidential. We are talking today about unlicensed care homes. So we've been talking, it's 2024 and the cost of everything has gone up. It's gone sky high, including the cost of senior care and senior communities is what we're talking about today. So there's a story that came out in the news this week. It's been on the local and national news. So I want to show this little clip of a residential care home that is unlicensed in Arlington, Texas, and just had some accusations of abuse and neglect. And so if we can run that story.
New tonight, Arlington police say this woman was arrested after running a network of unlicensed community living homes in Tarrant County. Investigators say 49-year-old Regla Bakur and her staff abused her clients, prevented them from seeking medical care, and stole their IDs and debit cards. NBC5's Keenan Willard explains why Arlington police are calling for more possible potential victims to come forward.
Michael Schultz lives on Woodbrook Street in Arlington. He says he's known something wasn't right about the house across the street since December, when he first saw 49-year-old Regla Bakur moving in.
For one thing, they've cleaned the house out. You know, they dumped all the furniture that was in there, and it got thrown away.
Schultz says he recently saw paramedics take an elderly man from the home in an ambulance. Weeks earlier, a man having a medical emergency came to his house late at night for help.
And came knocking on my door and couldn't speak English, that he needed a ride to the hospital. So we took him to Arlington Memorial.
Arlington police now say this home was one of five unlicensed community care homes in Tarrant County run by Bakur, part of her company called Love and Caring for People, LLC. Today, police announced Bakur had been arrested, charged with abandoning or endangering an individual in imminent danger of injury.
Obtained information that led to the belief these people were not being cared for properly.
Investigators say Bakur and her staff prevented people in their care from seeking medical attention, cut them off from family members, and took their debit cards and IDs.
And they misused this information on wills, on credit card applications, and to obtain things such as vehicles.
Arlington police say investigators also believe staff would drug clients each night with a narcotic. And police say caregivers did not provide items like wheelchairs to those with disabilities, leaving one man scarred from having to crawl around a home.
We need to address these invisible victims because that's what they are.
Arlington police and the Tarrant County DA's office say there may be additional homes they haven't found yet. They're asking potential victims and their families to come forward with information. Neighbors say they're still shocked by this alleged operation so close to home.
Because, hell, if you don't know who's in the neighborhood and why they're there, it can be interesting.
In Arlington, Keenan Willard, NBC5.
Bakur is being held in the Tarrant County Jail on a $750,000 bond. Now, NBC5 reached out to Bakur's family, asking for a response to the allegations. Right now, we're waiting to hear back. Police have set up a special hotline number to call with any information in this case. And you can find that number along with this story on NBCDFW.com.
Okay, that is very disturbing. So, Brian, good to see you today.
Thank you.
How are you, Joe?
I'm doing great.
Good. This kind of thing just upsets me so badly.
Yes.
We have a special returning guest, Jenny Knutson.
Hi.
Who is an expert on senior care communities in DFW.
Yes.
We thank you so much, Jenny, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And so I want to talk about just the cost of care. A lot of times these senior communities, with fees and whatnot, it's too much money for people to move in. And so a cheaper option is going to be a residential care home. And it is cheaper, but what is the cost actually going to be? So people that don't understand, what is a residential care home? Explain that first.
Absolutely. A residential care home is going to be a place for seniors that is in a typical neighborhood. residential neighborhood. It's the place you're going to live in. It can be a very, very fancy neighborhood all the way down to apartment complexes. It can be any of these types of structures for homes. And they will have residents that live there that are seniors, and they will provide care to them. They will provide the ADLs or activities of daily living, such as medication administration. They'll do dressing, they'll do bathing, incontinence care, a lot of things that you would get at an assisted living or a memory care facility. Only it's smaller, so you're likely going to have ratios of staff to residents that are also more amenable.
And I, you know, I had my background is private duty, and hospice, of course, but I, you know, hadn't been to that many residential care homes, and they are popping up everywhere because they are less expensive, and people find this is a good way to make money and make a living. So what attracts some people to the residential care home is people can move their things in. They can almost replicate mom or dad's bedroom at home. And so if they've got a little dementia or memory issues, they feel like they're in their own bedroom. They walk into the kitchen, the living room. It's a home environment.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're not trying to make a home environment out of a big building. These are actually home environments. And so, you know, I'm a big fan of the ones that are done really well. You know, I don't think that they're appropriate for everybody. You know, if you're highly mobile and you're pretty active, these are probably not the settings for you.
Correct.
Because you're going to find that your suite mates or your housemates are not as mobile, maybe not as cognitively intact as you might be. And so for the right patient, for the right resident, I think these things are really good. And I do like the caregiver ratios. They do show, there's been studies out there that show that there's a, I think the fall statistics, the fall rate statistics is like 25% of that of large buildings. And so there's a lot to like about them. The downside is, they, you know, they're, in some cases unlicensed and unregulated, and, you know, that's part of the point of what we're discussing today.
Yeah. And the social activities are going to be very different between the two.
Yeah.
So, okay. So this news story, this woman has an unlicensed residential care home. Evidently, I hear she's got five.
Wow.
So talk to us, Jenny, explain the difference between a licensed residential care home and an unlicensed.
Okay. The state of Texas actually has two different types of licenses for any assisted living regulated building. It's a type A and a type B license that they can have. And then there is a small and a large of each of those types. So each of those four designations that you could have different regulations and requirements when it comes to the way that the building is built, the life safety, when it comes to the dining and the nutrition, all the way to what kind of care can be provided, and also how many staff have to be awake throughout the day, which is, it almost sounds strange that anywhere you have your parent that you would have to wonder, is somebody going to be awake? Somebody can sleep? It just sounds strange to you, right? But there is a model that is set up to where, yes, they can sleep overnight. So a lot of residential care homes will have somebody that is a live-in manager, a house manager, and they might stay there and sleep and stay in the home for 3 to 4 days at a time and get up in the morning and cook breakfast and take care of the residents. Another staff person will then join them. And that's for a home that would have less than 16 residents, okay, in it. And it's a type A. So that means that those people could likely self-evacuate. Okay.
In the event of a fire or some sort of
There was a disaster. So whether it's cognitive ability or physical ability, then they could do that in that sense. So when you come to licensed versus unlicensed, it adds another layer to that. And unlicensed is perfectly legal to do. All right. And
because it gives it kind of a bad, almost a bad connotation.
To say unlicensed.
When you think like, I'm an unlicensed physician, like stuff like that, it kind of gives a bad sense, but not, they're not necessarily bad.
No, they are not. And I have recommended many of them, And there's a very, very specific use that is good to have for a non-licensed residential care home, actually. So an unlicensed can exist if there are three or fewer residents. Okay. Now, technically, you could have four and still be an unlicensed and not have to follow the Texas regulations. But that's if one of the people living there is your relative, the owner's relative. Okay. So if it's an owner's relative, they do not count that towards the number of the beds.
But you can only have one relative. Couldn't have like grandma and grandpa and two others, three others.
I think, from what I can tell in the regulations, it's one.
Just one. Yeah. Okay.
Wow. From what I can tell. Now, there may be deeper versions and subsets and all that, but it definitely says one. So with that, if there's under the three or under or with a relative, they don't have to follow the state regulations for an assisted living or memory care. In that sense. So that means that, hey, if the state of Texas says to be a type B facility, you have to have, you know, the ability to have people there awake 24 hours a day. It goes away. It's a moot point. There's no questions whether that's okay or not. It's whatever they want to do. Okay. Then at the same time, if that person is not able to evacuate at all, if somebody is bed bound, the state of Texas says they are not appropriate for assisted living any longer if it's continuously bed bound. Okay. This is even if they're at end stage life and on hospice.
But we see it all the time.
I know. I mean, I know. Until it's caught, it's going to happen. And wow. I have seen very unique ways that some people will hide it, you know. But if you're doing it right, then you're going to actually, in an assisted living, a licensed, you're going to apply for a waiver of appropriateness for that resident to the state of Texas. Because the state legislature did create a route for people to age in place and be able to pass in the home that they've experienced for so many years. But you got to take the time, go through the waiver process.
There's paperwork.
So is that a waiver per person?
Yes. And that would be just anybody that is not able to get out of the bed on their own. Somebody that's completely bed bound. And that's because they're going to take more people and a longer time to evacuate in a case of emergency. They are not looking at this, the state of Texas, as a reason for care. Like, they're not going to get the care they need because they're bed bound. They're looking at it as, how do we get them out of the building if something bad is happening?
And this doesn't matter whether you're type A, type B. No. This is just straight.
Yep.
Everybody.
Because remember, type A, you have to be able to self-evacuate.
Anyway. Okay.
Anyway, so then type B, you can take more advanced residents, right? And cognitively impaired residents, but you still have to have that ability to evacuate them safely.
Interesting. Okay.
So in residential care home, that goes away. So that's when I've used them before. When I've been a director at an assisted living or memory care and somebody has now aged in place and they are consistently not able to get out of bed. They're on hospice. We know that they're declining. I will put in a waiver of appropriateness first. And I will request it from the state of Texas. The state of Texas will review all the paperwork, which really it's like four forms you have to have signed.
And then, how long does it take to get back?
You actually, you have to have it in within 5 days of realizing that the person is inappropriate. And then they have 10 days to get an answer back to you. If they decline it, then you have 30 days to evacuate that resident. Or evict that resident.
Wow.
And so a lot of times, if somebody truly is end of life and that's the reason they're trying to stay there, they might pass during that 45 days anyway. And so in one scenario, yeah, they could still age in place through that paperwork process. What I'm seeing, though, more and more now is the state is denying those waivers quite often. There is one person that looks at those requests and subjectively will decide if that person should be able to stay there or not based off of the documents on the emergency evacuation planning, the number of other residents in the facility at the time that are maybe one person or two person transfers. And there is no appeal process.
So is this applicable to large and small?
Yes.
Because you mentioned if they're residential care homes, then this rule doesn't apply to them.
Right. If it's the unlicensed. Unlicensed.
Oh, so even licensed, these homes are supposed to. Wow.
Even licensed, the licensed care homes have the same regulations that an assisted living facility has.
It doesn't matter large or small.
Does not matter large or small.
Okay. So that's why you said there is a use case for the unlicensed ones because they can actually house them.
Yeah, they can house them. So I've had residents and their families before that the family can't take them home, but the state has said they can't stay. So they have to find another place. What are the other options? The other options becomes a skilled nursing home. And the family's like, I don't want my dad to die in a nursing home.
Nobody wants dad to die in a nursing home. Isn't
the cost here for in Texas is something like $7,000 a month, I think.
Yeah, if it's private pay. Yeah. And so they may not be able to afford it, but may not quite be Medicaid. I know we've talked about that before with the in-betweeners.
Well, one of the larger communities here, I call the executive director to see what skilled, because their nursing home section, we'll call it. They call it their skilled.
Sure.
It's $14,000 a month. And he said, Joe, we break even with that. It is so costly to do the skilled nursing. And so, you know, I know the Medicaid nursing homes, I mean, their budget is so small. So what do you do? I mean, if a family, they know dad, say he's in the hospital, he's been given, you know, 6 months to live, they don't want to bring him home anymore. You know, I mean, if he doesn't want to go to a nursing home, I've always thought, well, a residential care home is the very best option. So I've been doing this a long time, and I would bet you most of those communities are not doing those forms. That's what I would bet.
I can't say for sure because there is no way to track it.
Have you heard of that, Brian?
I had no idea about this rule. But I'm glad to hear that there is a reason for the unlicensed thing.
Because
we do see, we see quite a few people, you know, we work in residential care homes, we work in large ones, you know, as well. And we do see a number of people who are, you know, they're a two-person transfer or they're a Horio lift transfer. And, you know, from our standpoint, it's completely acceptable because we're training the caregivers on how to do that stuff. But, you know, when you're talking about from the state's perspective, you know, we got to be able to evacuate people quickly in the event of a fire or whatever. And if you got three or four of those in a house that houses, I don't know, 13 or 14, that's a lot to try to get out. And so I can kind of understand why they would do it that way. And that I also understand why you might want to be unlicensed because if the rules are set up that way to where you can't be in a bed and my only other option is a nursing home, an old folks home, then, you know, I think I'd rather go to a residential care home and live up my days there versus a nursing home.
Yep. So what I did in the building that I was in when this would come up, I went out into my area and I built relationships with the residential care home owners, licensed and unlicensed. So that way, when I had a resident that maybe wasn't appropriate for my community, I had some ideas of places they could go outside of skilled nursing. Mm-hmm. But what I did is I built the relationship. And because I am in the industry, I knew what to look for.
Right.
So, Joe, you come to me.
And you care.
Yeah. You come to me, Joe, and say, Jenny Knudsen, what am I supposed to look for? I don't know how to tell if this is licensed or unlicensed, if it's a good one or a bad one. But hey, my friend said it's good. You know, even if the best intention person ever refers any community, whether it's a facility or a residential care home, unlicensed or licensed, you need to stay involved. You need to stay present. You need to ask questions. Be kind, please. Be kind. We work hard in communities, okay? And it's exhausting and it's mentally draining. And there's a lot of stuff that families don't see that we take care of for you so you don't have to. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking more of the care aspect. Be kind, but ask the questions. Ask for documentation if you can. Ask for records. You know, be present. The people that are more present will get the attention.
So I know when patients are in rehab, there is a care plan and they have care conferences.
Sure.
And so in assisted livings, is it that the same thing for families or is it just when they move in, you kind of have an idea of what they want? Tell me how that works with a care plan for the assisted living patient.
So absolutely. So typically the person that has visited with the family or the resident about moving into a community, more normally it's going to be a salesperson. They will talk about the different care options that we have. They will do what we call a discovery. So they will start asking about that loved one's needs. They're going to say, so what is your mom's mobility like? Is she still able to walk? Does she need to use a walker or a wheelchair? Is she showering on her own? Are you having to help her shower? And you know, they'll go through some detailed questions, but we would also want to have an evaluation or an assessment done by the clinical team within the facility. Okay. And that will then determine from the medical standpoint, the healthcare side, what kind of services we're going to say we have to do in order for them to come as well. Because there are some things that We would not want to say, hey, we'll try it out and see if they really can do this. I mean, saying that they're completely mobile and we're like, okay, we'll test it out and see, without having seen that person get out of bed on their own and be able to stand up on their own, mm-hmm. is so risky, because then within that first 24, 72 hours, it's the most likely time they're going to have a fall.
You know, one of the other things that we run into, and I don't know if you've seen this, and I know you have, is that there's a weird thing when you create, when the government creates incentives and creates a scoring system, AKA your star rating mm-hmm. system, that is self-reported. You get this weird scenario where you have skilled nursing facilities mm-hmm. And or rehabs who will score a new patient for them, you know, prior to rehab at a certain level. And then there's an incentive for them to show some remarkable improvement at the end of it.
Okay.
And then when we get them home, we're like, holy smokes, this patient looks nothing like the rehab discharge. And if you're an assisted living facility and they're now a new resident for you, you guys are going, holy smokes, this looks nothing like that. So you absolutely do have to do your own assessment. If you're an AL owner, we've had series of issues with those. We've had issues where we've had enormously unsafe new residents moving into residential care mm-hmm. homes and or larger assisted livings, where they took the nurse's notes and the therapist's notes like gospel.
Yep.
And then we get out there, and I kid you not, like one of the worst ones we had was there was wounds on this guy's back, I swear, like this big, you could put a basketball through them. Yeah. Like it was literally eating him. It was unbelievable. Wow. An unbelievably unsafe discharge for him to go to mm-hmm. assisted living. But nobody did the assessment.
Wow.
Yeah. So make sure there's an assessment being done.
Yes, the assessment.
But that's neglect. You can't even trust what's coming out of the SNF or the rehab, because those notes aren't going to marry up a lot of times to what you're seeing at home.
So to continue then, on top of that, once the care plan has been developed, it has to be developed in an assisted living type B, at least facility, within 15 days. Okay. And either the resident or the family member, the POA, has to have signed off that they've reviewed it. Okay. So if you don't have it within that 15 days, you need to be asking about it. And you may have in that 15 days been like, whew, I get to relax. My mom's been good and taken care of. And so I am going to keep doing my thing. I'm going to take the kids to soccer practice. I trust them now. Haven't had any issues in 2 weeks. This is all good. But I don't need to get that care plan because they've already shown me it's been 2 weeks. It's great. The longer you let that go, the longer you will honestly have no idea if the reports they're giving you back are accurate or not, because there's going to be no way to track it, because you don't know what they had down for their staff to be doing. So some of the scenarios I've seen before are, hey, you know what? The nurse did the assessment, but the nurse didn't know, because they were new to one of the nursing CRM systems, right? That connects into the care system that tells the caregivers what to do. Didn't know that it didn't transfer all the information automatically. If there was something specialized, she needed to go into the care system that showed the caregivers what to do and personalize it. Only the basics transferred over from her normal system. Wow. That means, I'm telling you, it could have been 9 months. It could have been 12 months. The reason families were like, nobody's doing what I was told was going to be done. Nobody's doing their job. Well, no, the caregivers were doing what they had in their system to do, but there was just a lapse in somebody's education of a new computer system. All right. And that can be so dangerous on bigger things even. One of them was, you talked about getting the nurse notes from a rehab or a hospital mm-hmm. back to a community to see if they're appropriate. I've gone off of those before, you guys. It happens. We do it. We mm-hmm. get so busy. There are times that we end up doing it. One community
shame.
Recently, I know, shame. It's best practice not to, okay? But
what if that happened to the old-fashioned nurse-to-nurse report? I don't think that happens anymore.
It does not.
It?
The hospitals and rehabs. So yeah, the hospitals and rehabs don't call the communities anymore. It's very rare, and when they do, it's, hey, we're ready to discharge right now. Who's going to pick them up?
Who's the home health that you guys want to send?
They don't even ask that. They just assign them one, and then some strange company we've never heard of shows up and just starts working with them. But one hospital, I had a resident in the hospital, and we got the nurse notes a couple days after she was sent out and intubated. And guess what they said? They said she had a massive stroke. She's not going to recover from this one, y'all. She's not going to be back at the assisted living. She's not going to be appropriate. It's that bad. And so, you know, talk to the family. I'm so sorry to hear about the stroke. What stroke?
Oh, geez.
It's like, have you talked to the hospital yet? Have you visited at all? Well, yeah, absolutely. My brother and I both have talked to doctors and nurses separately. Okay. So have y'all been told anything about a stroke? No. And so they started getting very nervous. They called the hospital, and guess what the nurse at the nurse station says? Well, there is mention of this. I don't know the medical terms. I'm sorry. I'm not clinical. It had to do with the eyes and the dilation and stuff like that. So I just wanted the doctor to be the one to talk to you about that instead of me telling you earlier. Even when they got a hold and talked to the doctor, guess what? That information was not correct. He goes, your mom had no form of a stroke, period.
Wow.
Nothing to do with a stroke. Massive infection is what it was. No stroke. So it's like the communication going forward, it's a guess. And if people aren't with that senior to ask the questions and say, no, that doesn't add up. I'm sorry. No, that's not the way things go with my mom. She's not on that medicine. She is on this medicine. Why aren't y'all giving it to her anymore? If you don't have an advocate, you're gonna have more of a risk as far as either further decline, faster decline. Mm-hmm. This is in any size community, unlicensed, licensed, A, licensed, B, ALF, skilled nursing, memory care, it doesn't matter. You have to be present and you have to know what the plan is. Even if they seem like the best people ever, get what the plan is in the beginning because you have it in writing.
So, you know, going back to the unlicensed homes and kind of what we saw in the news, what I recommend as a care manager and an advocate for my patients that are in assisted living, they're in residential care homes or at home, any services provided by Medicare, you want to take advantage of. So most of my patients have supportive care. That's palliative care. That's a visiting physician. Mm-hmm. Most have either home health or hospice. And if they don't qualify for physical therapy anymore, I offer, hey, do you want a trainer to come out just to do exercises? Yeah. So anything that we can do to bring them to increase their quality of life, you want to do that. So I don't know in this news story where these families were that these patients had no outside source coming in for therapy or hospice or you know, whatever. It's just, it's very sad.
They're in the medical profession, right? Or so they appear. They're in scrubs. Okay. You know, and even Texas ALF memory care, you do not have to have a licensed nurse in your building at all. They just have to be available by phone 24/7 or available. The state regulation doesn't clarify if it's in person or phone. So you can have no nurse in the building. And so they see people in scrubs that are caregivers. All of the people in my buildings for the last 10 years, the families call my caregivers, who a lot of them we got to train. And that was amazing because when we got to train them as their first job, we got to train them the way that it should be done correctly. Mm-hmm. But that's the best education that they have. They will be called nurses. Well, your nurse told me this. Your nurse told me that. And so because of the scrubs, medical profession, people trust medical professionals, mm-hmm. right? Automatically. So they've got to be good. They're professional.
Well, and I was in a skilled rehab the other day, and a caregiver gave me a business card and said, you know, if you ever have patients that need to move into a group home, residential care home, I want to give you my card. Well, her name was on the card with nurse. Uh-huh. And so that's one thing I recommend to families. Is it a registered nurse? Is it a licensed vocational nurse? Define nurse. You know, you're right. If they have that on a business card, you have to, a lay person would just assume they're a nurse. Mm-hmm. And
correct.
Maybe they're not a nurse. You know, so you want to check. And you're right, pop in, do visits. Yeah. I had a situation where I had a patient that was on hospice getting nurses around the clock through continuous care. And the nurse called into the last minute, so I agreed to go. This was several years ago. But the entire night, maybe there were 10 residents in the home, the little assisted living. I could not find one staff person to get medication, the lorazepam and morphine sure. that I needed. So 8 in the morning, I knock on the director of nursing's door and just said, hey, you know, I was here all night, but I have not been able to medicate this patient because I couldn't find anybody. And she called our office, not knowing that I was the owner, but called our office and said, I don't want Joe Alch back. She is threatening my staff. You know, so basically don't ask questions. Yeah. I'm doing it the way I do it. And if you don't like it, you can go somewhere else, you know. So always advocate for your loved one. And there are 900 choices in DFW for senior living. So it's okay to ask questions. You are not ruffling feathers. You are advocating for your loved one.
Do you want to know where all the information is that a family could ever need to get extra assistance if they're in the same situation you are in, is in a building? There's a wall that has got to be accessible to all residents in every licensed facility. This includes licensed residential care homes, y'all, that has to have certain postings and notifications on it. One of those is who to call in case of emergency. And that is a phone number for who that person in the building is. If something's happening that night, where's a phone number for that person? You could have called that person and said, I can't find any caregivers. They then could have called on the caregiver's cell phone numbers or nurses or whoever. Although it just, they should have been able to be found, frankly. But there's also going to be compliance numbers if they're a corporation or owned by somebody. Mm-hmm. There's also a requirement to have an abuse, neglect, exploitation sign up for the state of Texas that gives a phone number to the state of Texas abuse, neglect, exploitation hotline that you can call yourself and say, hey, this is not okay. This is neglect. I can't find the MedAid. This MedAid is supposed to be available for this PRN med, and I've been here all night. Nobody's here. They can then say that that's an immediate concern because that's a med that's needed right away. And then they'll also have the ombudsman's postings on there that, and an ombudsman is an advocate as well that can come in from the state of Texas. It's a little different than a surveyor or Health and Human Services, a little different than Adult Protective Services, but it's more for issues between facilities and families versus just families in the outside public or the resident in the outside public. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of phone numbers on these walls, y'all. And I would just start dialing for dollars if you're concerned, because 9 out of 10 times the administrator or the executive director is going to want to hear from you right at that moment. Because if it's happening to that person, it's happening to others. And 9 out of 10 of them are not going to want it to be happening. And if they don't know, they can't fix it.
Sure.
Yep. So, Jenny, you have such great knowledge and information. So if somebody is listening to this podcast mm-hmm. and has a loved one in an unlicensed home or mm-hmm. licensed, let's say, and sure. just does not feel they're getting adequate care, how can they reach you?
Yeah. So I'm with Olive Branch Seniors right now, and I do actually go out and help families look into different properties. I don't find the properties to go to. I let the experts figure out which ones would fit their needs the best, but I will go out with the families as a consultant and look into those properties to answer some of the questions that they may not know or that they don't know to ask. I'll ask the questions they don't know to ask. But if you're going out on your own, all right. One of the big things too is every single place has to have a disclosure statement if they're licensed. Okay. So a disclosure statement has to be presented to you. 9 out of 10 times it doesn't get presented until move-in. Get it prior to. Okay. Get it when you're going through the sales process, because that disclosure statement's going to say exactly what services they'll do, exactly what they don't do. It will also tell you exactly what the ratios are for staff to residents. And one of the most common things is people are, oh, we have a 1-in-3 ratio, one staff to 3 residents. It's amazing. But then when you look at it, you're looking and it's got their housekeeper. It's mm-hmm. got their maintenance director counted into the staff. It's got their dining department into the staff, their secretary, receptionist, everybody. And it's not true. It's not a true ratio for the care aspect of it, because they aren't the ones that are going to be going if a pull cord is pulled.
So how do you ask that? Mm-hmm. So I want to know the staff ratio, staff to patient care ratio.
Like dedicated care.
You change it to direct care. Direct care.
Direct care.
Okay, so you ask, what is the direct care ratio from resident to staff? And that will change. And if they call them a universal worker, they are including every employee that is on staff in that building. Okay.
Now, I have seen, in their defense, I have seen housekeepers and I have seen dietary folks.
Oh, they are amazing. They do it. They will jump help in.
With transfers. Absolutely. And that kind of stuff. So this isn't to minimize them, but when you're trying to figure out, like, what is the dedicated staff, like this, the direct care staff that we're looking for.
Thank you for bringing that up because there are some amazing people that just jump in and get the job done and don't balk.
And another thing I tell clients is drive past that assisted living on a Saturday and Sunday and see how many cars are in the parking lot. Because sometimes I'll go on past something on a Sunday afternoon and there are two cars and maybe they've got 40 residents. So two people are taking care of all those people. Pop in on those off hours. And if they don't let you in, ask questions, call the owner. So most residential care homes, are they individually owned or corporately owned? Do you know?
There's a whole big mix of them. Okay. Some are a couple of nurses that'll get together, or even one nurse will get together and buy a home. They may have a normal 9-to-5 job or, you know, full-time position somewhere, but they go in and act as an extra job, as an extra career, as that nurse for that residential care home while they own it. And they manage the staff that come in to take care of them. And it takes one of the expenses off, but then now they're growing an investment. You know, they're growing an investment using one of the skill sets that they have. Mm-hmm. Those can be some of the best ones. You know, those are some of the ones that I refer to, actually, that are full-time nurses within the industry or outside, and they have started something in addition to what they're typically doing. But, you know, the pop-ins are important. You are legally allowed to put a camera in your parents' room, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I recommend it, and I don't at times. Decide on doing it only if you can control yourself and not be looking, because you can become obsessed with checking in.
Well, and I have it was a former client that literally that's all she did all day. And it was so unhealthy, And I was like, you know what? If you're going to be spending this much time, just bring your mom home.
Yeah.
Because they're never going to do it the way you want them to do
it. I've even had a camera be good for me as a director before, because I didn't know something was happening. And when the family brought it to me, I was like, oh my goodness. There's a process then I had to do, because there was an allegation of abuse, and that camera did show that it happened. What we then have to do is we have to self-report that to the state of Texas. Okay. Mm-hmm. We also have to call the police and take care of that. And that camera helped me to find out, because it was how the resident's family was able to find out about it. Wow. And so they can be very good, but you definitely need to have your boundaries and check on things only when there's a reason to check on them.
That's right. Well, Jenny, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
What a lot of information. I had no idea about the unlicensed thing.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
But always remember to be your best advocate for your loved one, or hire an advocate like me and Jenny, and we'll do a good job for you. So thank you so much, Jenny. Y'all have a blessed day.
You too.